and put those searchlights up on the tower right now. Move, move.
I listen to 2ARM, 92.1 FM, in the car and at work, for great tunes and community news.
My name's Paul Tolley. It's my pleasure, as always, once a month to talk to the Mayor, Sam Copeland, after the council meeting. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, Paul.
Now, what have we got today? I think we should start off with you hoping that the, maybe animosity is too strong a word, but the discussion around the rail trail would die away. What I'm seeing is that there's still a lot being said, and if I can quote you a couple, Trains North President Matthew Tierney said, vandalising a tiny part of it for a bicycle path is not a good move, and with the community largely on our side, we will continue to push the case for the New England Connection Railway at both state and federal levels. And then Trains North have said they have received written advice from the Minister for Regional Transport confirming that neither Armidale nor Glen Innes Council is in a position to proceed with their rail trail at present. And that's from the Gyra Gazette of the 21st of May.
Wow. Wow. Well, there you go. Look, Matthew Tierney and his group, you know, it's one of the great things about democracy. They should keep doing what they're doing if it means a lot to them. I question whether he really has the bulk of the community on his side, but, you know, how would you really know? In terms of the letter from the minister, I think I'd seen that bandied about, so certainly that comment, but no one's actually produced said letter.
Okay, so we haven't seen the evidence, Your Honour.
No, anyway, but certainly council's received nothing from the Minister for Regional Transport to indicate that it's not good. What I suspect it means is that neither councils have actually made the formal application to Transport for New South Wales to close that line. So both councils are still doing the environmental and surveying studies that need to accompany such a submission.
So you suspect accurate, but the implication is not perhaps correct.
I think you're spot on there,
Paul. Is that the way to put it?
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
Because we're going to come to a council one later.
Sure. Yeah.
An interesting one to me. I believe funding is guaranteed to complete design work on an upgrade to the old sewage system in Armidale. I saw a press release around that, around 1.2 million split between the government and Armidale Regional Council for an up-to-date state-of-the-art facility, because the current plant is more than 80 years old.
It is, and there'll be more to come from that. If anyone ever has the opportunity, and I know council at the beginning of each council term runs public tours out to the wastewater plant, it is fascinating.
Mm-hmm. I'll take your word, but I haven't
really
done it.
But no, do it, Paul. And I encourage your listeners to get out there. There's a bit there where after a lot of the water's treated and it trickles and filters through all these different channels, and then it gets put onto rocks, and it's old, it's quirky, it's in some instances these big tanks are actually have metal straps holding the concrete together before they collapse. So, yeah, that the upgrade is long overdue, yeah, and certainly part of that water treatment plant is more than 80 years old.
And I suspect that the technology has changed.
Sewage treatment plant.
I suspect that the technology's changed pretty considerably in 80 years.
Yes, 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 it would. Mm. But I think we do pretty well. Many of your listeners might know that our treated wastewater is then used in the centre pivot irrigators out there rather than going into the, you know, into the river system. So we suffer much fewer fines for pollution than many other councils do.
I suspect that along with all of that, there's not only the need to upgrade because of age and technology, but also with the increase in population in Armidale, I guess stress is another.
Capacity is a big issue. And so it's not just our sewage treatment plant, but, you know, separate start. I know this one you're referring to is the sewage treatment plant or the wastewater treatment plant, because we've got to have more optimistic names for everything nowadays. But also our water treatment plant is at capacity for our population as well. So both the Gyra water treatment plant, the Armidale water treatment plant, big issues.
Yeah, I was talking about the sewage. Well,
yep.
In the press release it said sewage. So
it is, and this one is for the sewage treatment plant.
So is that 1.2 million, that's just to complete the design and the feasibility studies, isn't
yes.
it? What about money after that?
Well, you can't go seeking money until you've done this preparatory work, because you go out, you know, lick your finger, put it in the air and say, I think we need $20 million. Mm. But having done all of this work, we'll be able to go and say, we need exactly $26.3 million to do this.
So indicative cost will come as a result of this.
That has to be
step one.
Step one, yeah. And so they're not the state government, and they're really tightening the belt because they have no money. They do need to see these worked up plans.
Okay, now I've spent a bit of time going through financial details because it's the end of the financial year and the start of a new one for council. And I think quite a lot of your meeting was tied up with those reports.
Yes.
Yep. So in the interest of transparency, I note that the Local Government Remuneration Tribunal has determined an increase of 3.75 for mayoral and council fees for next year.
Mm-hmm.
I know you don't do this. You don't apply it. You don't make the decision. It's like Canberra.
Yes.
We just make the statement. So that says, and nobody's going to get rich on it, by the way, but minimum of $15,370 to a maximum of $27,050 for council, and considerably more for mayor, can be up to $66,800 plus super. Councils traditionally set the maximum fee level in the past. Is that what's probably going to happen this time?
Yes, yes. All right. That's what was voted on last night.
Yes, and I haven't seen the initial minutes, so I was asking the question. And just to make clear to everyone again, these are set by external tribunals and not set by council. You and I have been following developments at the Weeds Authority, Craig.
Oh, yes, that's heating up.
For a while, haven't we? Last two interviews. Mr. John Rayner is the new New England Weeds Authority interim administrator, and he's delivered his first report and made serious reading, I have to tell you. I'm quoting, the financial position of the council, that's the Weeds Authority, is dire. Council is unable to pay suppliers and contractors for several months. Operations have been reduced to an absolute minimum. Council is now in the unthinkable position where the lack of available funding will result in the inability to pay staff within a very short period of time. Predicted operating result for the year is a deficit of $190,000. Original budget had presented a proposed surplus of $198,000. So that's pretty much a mirror image reversal. This reflects the circumstance where council has effectively entered a hibernation mode of operation, which is not sustainable. So my first question is going to be, where do people and organisations who use the Weed Authority services stand at present? Mm. And that's also council, of course, the edge of highways and roads, etc.
That New England Weeds Authority, which, as we've discussed before, but for your listeners, is the Weeds Authority for Glen Innes, Armidale, Yooralla and Walker.
Mm-hmm.
Each council has some of the councillors sit on the board of NIWA, which is the New England Weeds Authority.
And contributes financially.
And contribute financially. So, but look, let's be frank. An administrator is appointed because that organisation is a slow-moving train wreck. And it wasn't until an administrator was able to get in there, John Rayner was able to get in and lift the covers and just call it for what it is. So, NIWA, at the time of that interim report that he put through, owed over $1.1 million. The government funding to spray weeds, totaling a bit over $400,000, had been withheld. So even if that had come in, it couldn't have paid the bills.
And a couple of comments there. Firstly, if it's that odd situation, if they're not in a position to do their job, it's going to be more expensive to remediate that in the future than it is now. Second question, I did ask you last time, I noticed that he hasn't used that language, so I'll be very clear. Yeah. I want to protect myself here. I did say to you, was this a case of maladministration? Rayner hasn't made that statement yet, but you have to wonder why the councillors or those on the board or whatever the actual structure is hadn't noted this under due diligence and flagged it earlier. I mean, how does it get to the state?
But it certainly is a question. So was the Was the CEO hiding stuff? Was the CEO not aware of it and not reporting to the council?
And if not, why not?
If not, why not? But certainly the administrator has pointed out that as an organisation, it was suffering, and I realise that was a redacted report that went up. There certainly were governance issues there and serious managerial issues that have come to the fore. And look, the money just wasn't there. So either councils would have to pony up more to make it viable. The big question is where to from here.
And compliance issues, I would probably add to the two you mentioned.
I suspect so.
So where to now? I mean, are we in a situation where the Weeds Board is retrievable, or do we look at a new organisation which has similar functions but is perhaps constructed differently or perhaps more fit for purpose? Do you have any sense yet of that?
Well, the first call is that the weeds need to be taken care of.
And that's why I said the longer you leave things, the more expensive it becomes.
So the Weeds Authority is still operating. So just since that report came through, I am aware that some of the government funding has been released. Some of the creditors of that 1.1 have been paid. There is sufficient funds in the kitty to pay the staff. And the annual contributions for the councils will be collected in the next week or two. So in terms of ongoing operations, it's still happening as far as I know. So I wasn't on that board. We had three other councillors from Armidale were doing that. So my knowledge of all of this is really just coming from the administrator. So the former board of NIWA, with the appointment of the administrator, were relieved of their duties.
Mm-hmm.
And the administrator's now been talking to the mayors and the general managers of each of the councils. So the where to from here, there's a working group being put together, which is the general managers and some of the finance people from each council are working out what is the best way to...
Because the obvious question is what looks like, from an outside reading of mismanagement, and I'll just use that term and we can think it as broadly as we like. Council then has to ask the question, all councils, do I really want to put my money into an organisation that's business as usual?
Yeah, that's...
And that's why you've got the administrator, I guess.
That's why we have the administrator. So there's a few decisions that need to be made. What structure is going to be most appropriate? Does each council go it alone? The general managers have all said that would be more expensive for every council. We are better off centralising. So do we do another county council like this? Now, it's possibly, because they're fairly small organisations, the revenue, the turnover is about $2 million a year, 9 to 12 staff, I think, are employed there. So it's not a hugely complex organisation, but it comes with some, it doesn't have economies of scale. So you have to pay some finance people, some admin people.
And that's the benefit of continuing with the shared responsibility.
It
also means you've got someone out spraying and you go, well, we'll go to that lamppost and then you go from the next lamppost. Yeah. I mean,
that's true.
Yeah.
So there is that. But then, look, maybe there could be better economies of scale if there were a lead council that did it and the other councils contributed. I suspect that's where things might end up.
So the lead council, in a sense, contracts out to the other.
Yes.
To the other councils.
Yes. And maybe some of the spray rigs, you know, there might be one based in Glen, one in Armidale, one in Yooralla, one in Walker, and some staff based there, but one council would probably do the administration, et cetera. They'd still need to employ a specific manager to direct people where to go and how to do it.
And we have seen with council amalgamations in the past and other parts of the states where that can give rise to petty jealousies. I mean, they can all, but that just has to be dealt with, I guess.
It does. But in any event, as I said, it was a slow-moving train wreck. So, you know, it's good. I think John Rayner, he was the administrator or the finance, he's been involved when the Armidale Regional Council went into administration.
Yes, I did note the name.
he will get to the bottom of this. I suspect his period of administration, whilst it was initially for 3 months from the 17th of May, will most likely need to be extended just to sort things out.
We'll continue to watch this space.
We will continue to watch this space. I mean, one of the things is the, and this really should give comfort to those that are owed money by NIWA.
And staff.
Is that the member councils are the ones that will end up having to kick the, no one will go without the, regardless of what happens, the member councils are the ultimate backstop.
And I have to say, we really broke the story on this interview that you and I did. I think I asked you the question and you raised your eyebrows when you looked back at me and couldn't say too much on that first question. But we really, as far as the people of Armidale, ratepayers and citizens and residents are concerned, we really brought it to attention here.
That's true. And this is actually a big issue. This is, you know, I think a lot more important than many things that people sheet home to council.
Yeah, so, I think so too, which is why I went there. The integrated planning and reporting documents and making of the rates for 24-25 were presented to council. Were they passed?
They were.
Without amendment?
There was one amendment. For those that are interested, I can't recall the page. It might have been something like page 164, but it was item F 4.2.1 and F 4.2.2, which was dealing with advocacy for healthy winter air. One of the councillors, Councillor Robinson, wanted an additional point put in there to ensure that that advocacy included asking the state government for some money. So,
Councillor Robinson, who stood for Parliament.
Yes, she did. Mm. That's one and the same.
Yeah.
So that amendment was inserted. The staff were asked the question, would inserting this amendment create any additional administrative or financial burden on the council? And the answer was no. It's just a direction to, you know, when the opportunity arises, really just about continue to lobby and, you know, if we can get some money, great.
So we went ahead with it. Any changes to projected rate levels? I'll go through some of the changes immediately. So I believe that firstly, and this is important for some people, full rates harmonisation between Gyra and Armidale, which I think was a four-year process, achieved in the 24-25 year. And that was because when the amalgamation took place, there was a prohibition on rate rises. So you ended up with two separate rating structures and that's been gradually harmonised or evened out. So I believe that will make it probably much easier administratively for council to just have one rate process.
Well, if you actually look at the rates, a residential Armidale base rate is something like $470. It has a four in it. The base rate for residential Gyra is 200 and something. So, you know, there are different rates, but I think it was to get up to some sort of proportionality.
Yep, I think, and that happens, and that's been taking place over 4 years. Now, I noticed that, and this is again around transparency, council can say that water charges are not increasing, but there is a proposed increase to the access charge for water.
Yes, that's going up something to the tune of $14.
$14.35.
Thank you, $14.35. So, yes, that access charge, and that's, you know, about the cost of maintaining all the pipes and everything as well.
And council have said that's, or the report said in line with CPI, the charges for waste collection are also increasing roughly in line with CPI from the previous financial year. So these costs will come through on people's rates. So they're not actually the rates, but technically, but they are the charges that are associated with the amount that
there's about 600 pages of user charges. So some appear on your rates bill and some are if you actually go and use something. So if you're taking your rubbish to the tip, for example, or hiring a haul or what have you.
Any other surprises or anything that's relevant that you can think of?
Not from a from a fees and charges point of view. Mm. No, you know, the cost of doing business, you know, the sort of, and we might have mentioned this before on this show, the consumables that council has, gravel, building materials, et cetera, they're things that have just increased far, you know, via multiple of, you know, 3 or 4 over CPI.
And anyone building or doing renovations
knows very well aware of that, yeah. Yes. Yes. So, look, nobody likes to see these things go up, but I think that's just the reality of life.
All right. Now, we started with one war, which was the rail trail versus the trains. We're going to finish with another.
Well, I'd like to see the trains come back, and so if anyone can bring a train back, I'm all for it.
Here's another one. It seems that the climate wars are back, at least as far as the coalition is concerned. They've declared that they want to completely change the electricity and power planning in Australia and mix and go nuclear. And also our commitments to the Paris Agreement. Armidale Regional Council has been pretty proactive with renewables and in the way it's looked at power, and you and I have talked about that, so we don't need to go back over it. But that has led already, I understand, to investors in renewable and clean energy, apart from nuclear, and the word clean there is a bit debatable because there's a waste product that you, which is much larger than a Coke can and cannot be, as we understand. Is the uncertainty for investors in the area going to have any effect at this stage? I know this is to the future, but you've got a background around that, you know, about projects and project management. What's that going to do for us?
I don't think it will make any difference to it. And I had reason to look at the AEMO ISP, so it's the Integrated System Plan, last night because one of my daughters in a Year 8 debate is doing something about this very thing. Is nuclear? She was on the no side. Is nuclear feasible? Anyway, I suggested that she look at the AEMO report. Even if nuclear were to come in, and I think the 7 reactors that Peter Dutton was proposing would deliver.
Well, 7 sites, and they've now set up to 4 reactors per site. In some
I'll have that. Whatever it was, I saw something and said this will probably deliver 10 gigawatts of electricity. We currently consume
around 3.7% of our mix.
Mm. Yeah. So even if the nuclear did come in, it wouldn't spell the end for renewables.
No, but it's certainly creating uncertainty for the investors. And I'm really looking more because council has made some money out of this area, as we know. And
we're on the cusp of making the money. Mm. The money hasn't flowed yet. I think the projects that we have here so far, they're a long way down the track because if you were to project to 2050, it anticipates a lot more wind and solar coming online. So I'd say the impact would be on those projects that haven't even been thought of yet, not the projects that have already, whether identified the site, they've done all their studies or partway through the studies. I don't think this would kill it because nuclear is probably 20 years away. Or 15 or whatever they're going to be.
Let's go with 20.
Let's go with 20. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, if something were to be built, if you were to build your wind tower here in 5 years' time and it has a 25-year lifespan, you'd only be competing with nuclear for the last 10 years.
So the projects that council is looking at the moment and that I propose for our area, you think are solid. And you think that if there's any disruption or withdrawal of financing, investment, that's probably for projects the board at the moment.
Yeah, all of them would be subject to financing. But I think those people that are proposing renewables in this region are so far advanced in all of their planning and discussions. And, you know, certainly from a wind perspective, those projects are all being mooted by owner-operators with deep pockets. Now they will have to go out for some external funding, although except for one of them, I think can just cut the check anyway. I don't think this will slow things here.
Okay, I just thought it was worth asking.
Certainly with what are the known projects.
Because it is an investment base, of course. If people put their money in, they want to get some money back. And I was just, and I know that council is, as you say, on the cusp of having a return and the way it's working. So just thought I'd raise the question.
It's going to be interesting. I think it'll certainly make the next federal election, whenever that may be, May next year, interesting. The last day.
And I've seen a number of investors or proposed investors talking about the uncertainty and that they're reevaluating their position in terms of what they invest in and how, and they would like some sort of certainty around the future.
Yeah, sure. But you look at other countries that have nuclear also have renewables.
Indeed they do. Mm. And I did, just in passing, think it was interesting that the party of free market wants to nationalise.
There we go.
Things are always interesting in the political area.
They are.
At Canberra, at state, and down at council. Thank you very much, as always, for coming in and having a chat.
Thanks, Sam. Paul. Good to chat.
We'll do it again in a month.
Indeed.
Cheers.
Bye.
Broadcast, then podcast. If you missed it or want to hear it again, then visit our webpage, 2arm.net.au/podcast.